Okay, we have the opportunity to learn the second aliyah of Hazinu, which again is a brief aliyah, but has a lot of synergy for what we're talking about this week. But first, before looking at the aliyah itself, let's just talk a little bit about this unique parsha, because Parshas Hazinu has its own status in a number of ways, and it stands out separately from the rest of the Torah. It stands out visually. You look at it, it's written as a song, and it seems to be the reference to a song that we find in the end of Parshas Vayelech, that the Torah tells us the 613th mitzvah, mitzvah tayag, v'yata kitzu lachem es ha-shira hazos, that you should write down this shira, which we understand lahalacha to refer to the entire Torah. The whole Torah is called the shira over there. And that's the mitzvah, to write down the Torah. The Rambam understands it as really a mitzvah specifically to write down Hazinu, but because we have to have it in the context of the Torah, so it turns out that we write down the whole Torah. So it seems like the reference of Shira is both to Hazinu specifically and to the whole Torah. And the idea of referring to it as a Shira, the Ramban writes that it's always performed as a Shira, which could be a reference to the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah in Parak Zayin Halacha Yud Gimel, where the Rambam writes that there were places where every day they would sing the Shira of Hazinu. There are other interpretations also in the Paras Yosef Achara. She quotes a few views, quotes Rav Avigdor Katz, saying that actually Shir is Milashin Tsar. It's about painful subjects, because indeed Hazinu has a lot of tokacha in it, a lot of muster in it, a point that we'll come back to. The Mincha Belula, it's also quoted in Paris Yosef, understands it to be Milashin Ashurenu, that it's about predictions of the future, and that's what we're talking about. The Ksava HaKabbalah explains that it doesn't mean that Hazinu is a song, but that the word Shira here is from the same Shoresh as song, and it means straight, and that's essentially the descriptor here, that it's giving it to us straight, so to speak. The idea that it could be something that we're cheerful and singing about, even though it has this negative, ominous content, so there's a suggestion, also quoted in the Paras Yosef, from one of the Belzer Rebbes, that maybe reading Hazinu, we read it as a Shira, because it's like we see by the Karbanos, that call Osek B'Torah Ola, Ki'ilu Hikriv Ola, that when we study a certain parsha, it's counted for us as if we actually performed it. So here, instead, and we prefer this than the real thing, that by studying Parshas Hazinu, that saves us from its actual negative predictions, and therefore that's what we're happy about. So that's the Shira. There is also another unique component about this, and it's a little bit ironic, as you'll see in a second, but Hazinu has a special quality. The Gemara tells us in the Maseches Rosh Hashanah, on Daf Lamed Aleph, that there is a acrostic, Haziv Lach, Hey Zayin Yud Vav, Lamed Chaf, and that tells us how to break down the aliyahs. That we use those letters to identify the beginning of each of the first six aliyahs, and that's how it was read in the Beis HaMikdash, how it was read in Shul also. So on the one hand, okay, so this is helpful, you would think, okay, this is the one parsha that we have a Gemara telling us how we break down the aliyahs. The irony is that there actually are a number of different combinations you could make that would come out to that acrostic, and therefore it ends up being less helpful than it might seem. And the Sfarim, they quote as many as six different combinations you can come up with. So there's six different shitas among the Rishonim as to how exactly Haziv Lach plays out. The view that we've adopted is really the view of the Rambam, that quotes from the Rif, the Shulchan Aruch has. So it's one of the possibilities, but it's a little ironic here. This acrostic is supposed to help us know what it is, and it actually doesn't end up really settling the issue. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shechter quotes the Nefesh HaRav, that Rav Soloveitchik understood this is actually a din d'oraisa, even though laning is not a din d'oraisa in general, But this is a din of how to read Hazinu when you read it, that it has to be Kichsava, and that it's written that way in stanzas. That's the idea. That's it's inherent in its presentation. And therefore, it has to be read that way. So if that were to be the case, as the Salvechik understood, that that would mean that it should be read like that during the weekdays also. It's not just about the Shabbos breakdown, but that the first three Aliyahs should be read like that during the week as well. And here, because of when Rosh Hashanah fell out, so we end up having a lot of Hazinus. We have two extra Hazinus. So it's all impacted by this question, because that's how Rav Soloveitchik understood, but it's against the Ramah. The Ramah quotes from Mordechai that this is not necessary during the week. This is only when we're reading the whole Parsha on Shabbos. Machloka said extra nafkaminas this year because of all the weekday readings up to this morning of Hazinu. The phrase Haziv Lach is just an acrostic, but it's also been interpreted in the Svarim. Rabbeinu Bachya understands that we should read it as a word. Haziv, Ziv is glory. Haziv Lach, that the glory is yours, that we are asking for a return of the glory. Now the Maharsha writes in his commentary to the Gemara, to Rosh Hashanah, that this is a remez to the light that's shown out of Moshe Rabbeinu's face, Ziv Panav. Rav Moshe Wilson, the Meshkiach from Tar Vidas, Munas Itacha, so he sees Ziv as parallel to Hadar. They both mean glory. Ziv and Hadar both refer to glory. And just like Hadar has additional meanings, that the Gemara says, you know, what does pre-Eitz Hadar mean? Here's our Sukkot material. So what is pre-Eitz Hadar? So we normally translate it as a beautiful fruit. Pre-Eitz is fruit of a tree that is beautiful. But the Gemara also reads into it, Hadar be'ilan mishana l'shana, that it lives on the tree from one year to the next. And the explanation is that the Klal Yisrael is compared to the Esrog, that it survives through all the seasons. It has all the ups and downs. And that's its theme. That's how Klal Yisrael is represented by the Esrog. So here, if there's like a parallelism between Ziv and Hadar, so it's the same kind of idea, the pre-Eitz Hadar, the Ziv, which is a clue to the idea that, as the parasha indicates, we'll have our ups and downs, but ultimately the Jewish people survive. Just one more point about the parasha as a whole. At the Rambam, Hilchos Tevila, in Parak Yud Gimel, also notes that normally when we break down the Aliyahs, to go back to that point, so we're supposed to end on a Dover Tov. We're supposed to end on a high note, on a positive note. But the Rambam says that when it comes to Hazinu, we don't have to, because it's Tochacho. So, Rav Nassim Gishtetner, in his Sefer on Chumash and Harus Nassim, so he notes, well, how did that get to do with anything? So, okay, so it's Tochacho, but Tochacho could still be arranged differently as far as the Aliyah breakdown. Why is that so significant? So, explains that presumably this is connected to the idea, which we mentioned this morning, of Tshuva Me'ahava, the idea that tshuva, when it is properly motivated, is able to transform averus into something positive. So too, if we're makabel atokacha, so then our reality changes, and therefore what seems like it's ending on a negative note actually is bringing about positivity, and therefore we can end on that note as well in order to reflect that fact. Okay, so that's all fascinating and unusual as far as this Aliyah is concerned, as this Parsha is concerned. But now let's get into the Aliyah itself. So the second Aliyah is going to be very relevant, at least in one of the Psukim, to topics that we spoke about this week. As the Aliyah begins, V'chor Yemos Olam, so remember the days of old, Binu Shenos Dar Vador, that we should understand all the years, the generations, Sha'ala Vicha V'yageidcha. Ask your father, ask your ancestors, and they will tell you. V'zikeinecha V'yomruloch. And your wise ones, and they will explain it to you. So, first the idea, Binu Shenos Dor V'dor, so this whole notion of reflecting on history, really both the history of the past and the future. The commentaries understand that we should try to look for the patterns in the generations. We should try to study Jewish history, try to look back at what has happened, and try to trace events. As Rav Hirsch comments on this pasuk as well, that that's the idea, that we're not simply marking history, but we're trying to understand its context and how things take place. And then, as you know, it says, Shalavicha v'yakeicha, and then you should also look more to your personal history. So you should ask your father, ask your grandfather about your family, how they fit in, and also try to see that pattern as well. The idea of Sha'al v'yomru, Sefer Bechia, he suggests that the difference in message here is that we're asking for facts, so we ask our ancestors for the facts, but we need Chachamim, we need the Canaan, to be able to explain it. And therefore, that's the whole message here. We're gathering the facts, but we're also trying to understand, and it's only through the long view that we're able to do that. This idea of Binu Shanel Star Vador, that we should come to an understanding through looking at the generations. The word Bina has a personal connection to, appreciation for, named my Svarim, Bina Besvarim, to reflect, among other things, but other reasons too, but that the idea of Bina is a kind of understanding that emerges from looking at the accumulation of wisdom. And lahavin davar mitoch davar, to understand from one thing something else. So the notion of looking at history, looking at what has happened, and trying to understand how to apply it to the future, that's what's reflected in this idea of binu shenol star vadar. So the idea as well, that's very relevant to us in these past few sugyas, so sh'ala v'icha v'yageicha. So why is that pasuk very important for us, what we've been talking about? So this is a contender. We've made many references to the pasuk of Lo Sasser from Parshas Shoftim, under the assumption, the view of the Rambam, which we had noted that Ramban disagreed with, but the view of the Rambam, that Lo Sasser is the source binding us to observe Dinim Derabbanan. So the truth is, there is a Gemara that sounds like that, but it's a machlokus in the Gemara. So the Gemara appears in two places, the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos and Daf Chof Aleph, and the Gemara also on the Chof Gimel, actually, it's the Gemara of Chanukah, Seth Chof Aleph, on the Chof Gimel, and it's also in Maseches Sukkah and Daf Mem Vav, where the Gemara, in the context of the Gemara of Chanukah and Shabbos, the Gemara asks, okay, what bracha do you recite on Erev Chanukah? And the answer is, So the Gemara says, really? We were commanded to light Hanukkah candles? I read the whole Torah. I don't see anywhere that it says you have to light Hanukkah candles, or you have to light candles in the 25th of Kislev. I don't see anywhere in Chumash. So, Heichon Tzivanu. Where did we get an instruction like this? So the Gemara responds, well, maybe it is Lo Sasser, which sounds like the view of the Rambam. And the Ramban disagrees, we'll come back to that in a second, but that view in the Gemara there is Rav Nachman. Rav Ivya disagrees, and Rav Ivya says, actually it's from here, it's from Hazinu, it's from Sha'alavicha V'yageicha. So that's actually the source. So what's this machokis about? It's the Ramban himself, who is not going to be deterred by the Gemara bringing up Lo Sasser. So the Ramban says that when the Gemara mentions Lo Sasser, it does in other places also, in the context of Dinim Derabbanan, it means it's Asmachta. It doesn't mean that that's actually the thrust of the pasuk, that that's actually the authority of the Torah behind all the Dinim Derabbanan. It means that the Gemara is quoting an Asmachta. Where do you find a support for the idea of following rabbinic law? So in that context, he says to the Machlokus here in the Gemara is, should we say that Lo Sasser only covers that which is based on something in the Chumash itself, and we are protecting it? So then maybe it would mean, even though he's saying it's not the actual meaning, but maybe the Asmachta type of meaning, is that go to the rabbis to ask how to perform the mitzvahs in the Torah, And that if they also tell you, protect the mitzvah in the Torah, enhance the mitzvah in the Torah with such and such, so we have an asmasta that that also is a part of that discussion. And the Rambam would say more than that. But it would come all out of the context of that discussion. But maybe that's only when it's something that is in the Torah itself. But it's built on something that's in the Torah itself. But here we're talking about Hanukkah candles. So it doesn't have any root in the Torah. It's a whole new mitzvah. So maybe that we need a different kind of source in order to tell us. And therefore say, Sha'al Avicha V'Yageidecha. The Ritva, other Rishonim have this idea as well. The Ritva and the Sech Shabbos around, they all say that that might be the Pshat. Others suggest that there are other distinctions here between the view of Rav Nachman and Rav Avia. We favoring Lo Sasser, we favoring Shalavicha V'Yageicha. So one possibility, the Shuvah's Neil David writes, that it could be that Lo Sasser is only on Siagin, which is really a kind of a similar idea. You could also suggest, thinking, that the Gemara is not explicitly addressing the source for Dinim D'Rabbanan. The Gemara is asking, how can we have the phrase of Itzivanu in a bracha when we don't have a explicit mitzvah in the Torah? So it could be that that's where there's a machlokas. Okay, we know for other reasons, Ramban, don't worry about this. We know from other reasons that we have to observe mitzvahs midrabanan, but to recite a bracha on them, so that's the question where that comes from. There's a contemporary sefer called the Shalmi Yechezkel, where he assumes that this is connected to a discussion that Achronim have, and that they really insert this both into the Rambam or the Ramban, depending on how you want to interpret it, but leaving them aside, that the question is if we could acknowledge that Lo Sasser is a source for Dinim D'Rabbanan, but what is the application of that? Does that mean that it's just a general directive to obey Chazal, like we've discussed in the view of some of the Achronim, and it's all about not rebelling against Chazal? Or is it more specific than that, and does it really give the status of a Torah commandment to every specific instruction from Chazal? So it could be that that's the machlokas. That if we're going to recite a bracha, says the note, if we're going to recite a bracha on Hanukkah candles, so then, all right, we understand that we have to light Hanukkah candles, that Chazal have authority wherever it comes from. But still, how does that justify me using language of Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzvot V'Tzivanu L'Had Dvnei Shel Hanukkah? So there is a specific mitzvah to do that. So then maybe, yeah, that according to Rav Nachman, it is from Lo Sasser. And the Rebbe would say, no, Lo Sasser is just the general directive that you're not supposed to rebel against Chazal and you have to accept their authority. But that an individual mitzvah should have its own status, that we could say it's as if we were commanded, so that's where you get the Sha'al Avicha V'Yageicha in order to tell us that. Tzvas Emes, in his commentary to Sukkah, so he has a little bit of a back and forth about this, and he notes that the idea of Haggadah, so to speak, is both in this pasuk and in Lo Sasser, Lo Sasser Medav Asher Yagidu Lecha, and here, V'Yageicha. So the idea that the Haggadah is the key issue that we're looking for maybe reflects the idea that, like we talked about in the past, that Chazal, when they make their rulings, are really understanding the Ratz and HaTorah, are interpreting what it is that the Torah is really getting at, and what the Torah would really like to see happen, even if it's not a Befei Rishivli. So the Yageicha is like, they'll explain it to you. So either Shiyagidulcha, that which they explain to you is really what the Torah is looking for, or here in this pasuk, Shalavicha V'Yagedcha, you ask them and they'll tell you what it is that God really would like to see from us as interpreting the context of the psukim, and we have to work off of that. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva, has a comment in a few places, but the Chassam Sofer, he argues with the premise of the Ramban. He says that the idea that there's no Ikra in the HaTorah for Hanukkah, so it's not really true. It says we do have a basis in the Torah for Hanukkah. So you might think, well, it's Parsh Paloscha and Neris, you know, where you find some references there to the future menorah, but at least in Chazal. But he's actually referring to something else. He's referring to a drasha the Gemara has, or a Kavachomer the Gemara has, in the Sefer Megillah on Daf Yudalim, that there the Gemara is talking about how we say halal and purim and chanukah and things like that, and the Gemara brings a kal v'chomer from the Shira Sayam, that mame avdus l'cheres amim shira sakal v'chomer mitzvah l'chaim, that if we were saved from slavery, so we say shira, so if we were saved completely, so then for sure we should say shira. So he says, really there is a basis min ha-Torah, even though Hanukkah historically only happens later. But the notion that we should recognize an event like Hanukkah is essentially coming out of the Torah, and therefore doesn't think that the distinction of the Ramban, that this is something which isn't coming from the Torah itself, he doesn't think it's true, which is a whole side issue, because it's also relevant to the Baal Tosef question, because the commentaries discuss how it is that if we're worried about Baal Tosef, that Chazal could add on new holidays, could add on Hanukkah and Purim, and that gets involved in some of the discussion and tracing it back to any kind of indication from the Torah itself that this is appropriate. But in any event, the Chasam Sofer writes that he says, doesn't think he can call Hanukkah something that's not Ikar Min HaTorah. So he says, maybe the difference between Lo Sasser and Shal Zichar Yegedcha is just about Mrs. Lo Sasser and Mrs. Lofei, of course, the Kiryas Sefer like that, that maybe the idea is that Bososu would tell us that they could create safeguards, tell us what not to do. But the mitzvah say of Hanukkah, so maybe that we don't know from Bososu. And therefore, maybe we need Shalavicha V'yakecha as the affirmative commandment to do positive mitzvahs. And there's a sefer by Yechi Yosef who notes that the response to Chasam Sofer's point that this is something which has an Ikar Min HaTorah, says maybe we could split that a little further. And maybe that's what the machlokus is about, that halal of Hanukkah, okay, so that has an Ikar Min HaTorah. That's what the Chasam Sofer is saying, that there's a kal v'chomer to tell us that halal should be applied to these drabanim tovim as well. But the idea of more than that, that the other mitzvot, like Ner Hanukkah, how do you see that Ner Hanukkah is something which is derivable from anything in the Torah itself? Maybe that's a bigger jump. So maybe that's my focus. Maybe that's the question of whether you understand that Neres Hanukkah is an extension of Halal. It's a part of the Eichel Meis. You could say a lot of fascinating Torahs about Hanukkah. But maybe that's where the Gemara is finding a distinction there as to whether it's about how to categorize Neres Hanukkah or how to categorize the different dinim that are available in the pantheon of Din Rabbanan. So a number of theories here as to what exactly is animating this machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Avi about this pasuk. There's quite a lot written about this. Rav Shach has a little bit about this. In many Sfarim, there are some extensive discussions about this question. What exactly is behind the machlokas Rav Nachman and Rav Avi? Rav Lau, senior, Shlomo Meir Lau, in his Shuvah Siachal Yisrael. So he noted that if you want to say this is a commandment, but it's not listed in the Moni HaMitzvahs. You know, this doesn't count the Shal Avicha V'Yegedcha. It doesn't seem to be one of the 613 mitzvahs. So maybe the point is we'll have to say it's an asmachta, like the Ramban was really saying, that it's an asmachta possibility. And that the idea of an asmachta, which some of the Rishonim explain, that asmachta isn't necessarily that the Chazal came and put a meaning onto a pasuk that's completely disconnected, but that asmachta is relevant in order to give us a little bit of a sense of the Ratzon HaTorah, of what the Torah is cluing us into, is desirable, and therefore Chazal picked up on it, which is also something we spoke about this week and last week, about the idea that maybe Zichron and Trua is in that category, that how could we reconcile the fact that Zichron and Trua seems to be different weights given to it in the Bava Yerushalmi, that seems to be a reference to the idea that we don't blow shofar on Shabbos, and yet we understand that to be a Drabbanan. So if you see Asmachta in that way, then maybe it's an Asmachta in the sense that they were able to perceive that this is the Ratzon HaTorah, and therefore they acted based on that. It's also quoted in terms of the word V'yagechcha and its meaning, quoting the name of the Shin of a Rebbe, that Haggadah is from Lashon Aguda, that it's what creates bonding, it's what creates a unit. And therefore, if you want to have a continuity to the Jewish people and to be one entity, So Shalavicha v'yegecha. So we should consult your father, and he will inform you. He will tell you what it takes in order to maintain that continuity. It's also quoted that Haggadah can also mean speaking to somebody in a sharp way, Zvarim Kashim, and Sefer Leis Simcha is quoted as saying this, and that therefore the idea is sometimes we need to get the Musar, we need to get the reproach, and so we say, Shalavicha v'yegecha, so we have to sometimes go to the Father and get the Shtark Musar. Okay, so now the Pesukim go on to say very interesting, kind of poetic things about the history of the Jewish people and God's relationship. It says, "B'hanchel el yom goyim." So when God, the highest, so when he set up all the property of the nations, "B'hafrida el b'nei adam," he separated all the people. "Yatzeid gvul asamim," he set up territories for these people, for these nations, "L'mispar b'nei Yisrael," for the Jewish people. So it's hard to understand exactly what this pasuk is getting at. The next pasuk is going to talk about the identity of the Jewish nation. Here in this pasuk, it seems to be saying that God set up boundaries for nations overall, and that somehow that was also to the benefit of the Jewish people. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the Jews benefit from the various cultures, which you find in some Rishonim, some Gemaras, that there is this notion that the Gullus had this upside to it, that the Jews were able to incorporate various chachmas, or that they were able to pick up gerim? It's what the Gemara suggests in one place, that the Jews were scattered among the nations in order that they were able to accumulate gerim who were appropriate. So maybe that's what the pasuk is getting at. And the Sefer Lev Avraham, they collected ideas from Avraham Weinfeld, author of the Tshuva Slave of Rams, so more recently they came out with Sefer HaChumash in him. So he thought maybe possible to say that the sources in Chazal that indicate that it's a chesed to the Jewish people, that the nations are distinct from each other, that we don't have the Jews, you know, us versus them, and then we'll be one whole unified entity, because then if they would ever go to war with the Jews, so there would be no hope, and the Jews, Chalila, could be wiped out. But because the nations are distinct from each other, even when there is an issue, so even if Chas v'Shalom, something happens, but there's a remainder of the Jewish people that survive. So that's what it says. Yatzeid gvul asamim, he sets up boundaries to make the nations distinct from each other. So l'mispar b'nei Yisrael, that's what keeps the number of the Jewish people. That's what keeps the Jewish people surviving, because of that distinction. Okay, could be. The next pasuk says, Ki chelek Hashem amo, Yaakov chevel nachalaso. So the nation of the Jews, so they are God's portion, and Yaakov is the chevel, the lot of his inheritance. So Rav Hirsch has a lot to say about this. And he notes that with all the other nations in the world, so you have a geographic location, and that creates a cultural identity, and the people are influenced by emerging from that geographical context. So a nation comes out from the environment in which it's in. But the Jewish people are different. The Jewish people are formed in the desert as a nation that is impacted by God's values, not by any kind of surrounding culture, but by a priori vision of what their mission in life is, and then they will inhabit Eretz Yisrael as that nation. But it's not that there's a culture in Eretz Yisrael that's going to form them, it's the other way around, that they are God's chelek, and then that becomes combined with the nation in order to form their national identity in that context. Okay, so next pasuk tells us, "Yimtzaehu be'eretz midbar, u'b'sol yel yishimam." So God sought them out in the desert, in Sohu, Sohu v'vohu, in total nothingness, yel yishimam, it's a howling wilderness. Yisalivenu yivanenehu, he surrounds them, and he also instructs them, he also teaches them. And Yitzranu Kishonenu, he watches over them like the apple of his eye. So here, what exactly is going on? He found them in the desert. So here, it's interesting. There is a seemingly contradictory message that, in general, there's a stira, but here it's really all in one place, that we have a Mesorah, that it's based on the Pesukim, that we accepted the Torah enthusiastically. It said, not to the Ishmael. And yet, there is a Mesorah that's less explicit, but still there in the Gemara, that God had to force us. That Kafu Aleihem Har Kigigis. That God took the mountain and held it over our heads and said that if you don't accept the Torah, this is it. This is the end for you. And if that's the case, so there is clearly a tension there, right? So on the one hand, we enthusiastically accepted the Torah, but we also had it forced upon us. So it's a pretty striking question, and these Rishonim have to deal with it. And it's striking in that it appears, both those ideas appear on the same Amud in Shas. So the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Daf Peches tells us both things right after the other. So the question is kind of unescapable, and that they do seem to be at odds with each other. On the one hand, oh, the Jews were amazing, master of Ishmael. But also, you should know that God forced them to accept the Torah against their will. So how do you reconcile that? So Tosus over there raises the question, and Tosus suggests that we accepted it first, but then it had to be forced upon us so that we wouldn't lose our resolve, and that we wouldn't decide to leave. So to make it a binding commitment, it was forced upon us. Or there's a Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach that's very often quoted, that it drew a distinction between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, that we were very enthusiastic to accept Torah Shebichtav, the Torah Shebaalpeh, so many details, so hard. We weren't interested in that, and God said, no, it's a package deal, you gotta take the whole thing. So, in the Gemara in Shabbos, it is a stira that is clear because both passages are on the same Amud. Here you have, according to the way Chazal read it, you have both ideas in the same pasuk, because here it says that Yimseihu be'eretz mibar, so he found them in the desert. So Rashi says Osa Makrobo ne'amanim be'eretz mibar. Here he found them faithful in the desert. Shekiblu aleihem toraso malchuso, that they accepted the Torah, that they were enthusiastic and happy about it. Mashlo asu Yishmael ve'Esav. What Yishmael and Esav, they didn't do. So the Jews accepted it, and they didn't. And if you keep reading in the Rashi, so the word Yisrael Bevenu, that God surrounded them, because Rashi asks the next one, so Rashi says, Sham Sivivan Dehikifan Ba'ananim. So there God surrounded them with the clouds, the Sivan Ptegalum La'abaruchos, and with the flag, also the Sivan Ptachtis Hahar, Shekafo Aleihem Kigigis, and also surrounded them with a mountain that they held over their heads. So that's the reference to that Gemara, that we were forced to accept the Torah. So according to Chazal's reading of the Pasuk, is both ideas in the same Pasuk in seemingly a contradictory way. That here we're praised for willingly accepting the Torah, and then the word later on, the Pasuk makes reference to the fact that it was forced upon us. In general, it's interesting that if this is a parasha of Tochacha, that here we're being praised in that context, it seems also to be a little dissonant. Lubavitcher Rebbe had some thesis about that to try to explain how that fits. But aside from that point, just the idea that we seem to have a stira here, so that's difficult, and some of the answers in the Rishonim to the Gemara and Shabbos work here. Some are a little harder. So you know, maybe this is about the relationship between Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat, or maybe it was about keeping us there. Sefer Chavasel Sashar, and he has a discussion about approaches to this, and maybe it also has to do with the word here, another reference to Bina, we find in this passage, Givon and Nehu. So that God instilled within, as Rashi says, Besor Uvina. So perhaps the idea is that, yes, we were willing to accept the Torah, but the need to go deeper and to get an understanding of its whole context, so that we had to have some kind of pressure to stay focused and to stay committed to that process, perhaps. Okay, so the next pasuk tells us, Kanesher Yayakino, Al Gozalav Yerachef, Yifros Kinofav Yikocheyu Yisraehu Al Avroso. So here he treats us like an eagle does with his nest. An eagle will wake up his nest. And Al Gozalav Yerachef, it hovers over the young birds, Yifros Kinofav Yikocheyu, it spreads out its wings, and it takes it, Yisraehu Al Avroso, and it carries it up high. So Hirsch, in his commentary, has a lengthy explanation here, if you take a look, where he talks about this imagery of an eagle. In America, we like eagles, so we draw in the eagle imagery also, but the Jews had it first, so, but really it's God here, I guess, which is the eagle, and we are the little birds, the little eaglets, but the idea of how an eagle stirs up its nest, wakes up its nest. So Hirsch explains that it's not like other birds where when the bird flies away with its young, so it scoops them up with their wings, puts the wings under and scoops it up. But rather, it wakes up the birds, tells them, okay, we gotta go, and then they spread out their wings above the little birds. And the birds then jump up to the wings. So what you have here is imagery of God directing our path, and we jump up to meet it, that we rise to the occasion, that we are inspired, and we come to meet it in the air. And that's very much consistent with some of the other imagery we've seen, and that is essentially our mission in life, that we are there to be infused and inspired by God's mission and directed to us, and to rise up to the occasion and to be lifted up. Okay, that's a very nice idea. And just to close off the Aliyah, so it also focuses on God's exclusive relationship with us, and that Hashem Badad Yanchenu, so God leads us apart from all the other nations. And here the Jews, referred to in the singular in these psukim, representing the Jewish people, he doesn't have any other God, any foreign God. So it's an exclusive relationship in both senses. And that's a very appropriate point for us to close for Yom Kippur. That Yom Kippur is the time when we are going to be, so to speak, alone with God as a nation and as individuals. And some people this year are going to have to actually daven Yom Kippur alone, and they'll have an even more profound sense of being personally alone with God. But the notion of feeling that relationship as powerfully as possible, that is what this message is here to convey, and it's a very appropriate one for Yom Kippur. And ending off the Aliyah, like we said, it's all meant to be B'davar Tov. So that's also an appropriate note for us to stop on. But the idea that Parshas Hazinu, with all of its less pleasant imagery, is ultimately for our benefit, is ultimately to prompt us to a tshuva that is actually a tshuva me'ava, that has that fantastic transformative power to not only forgive us for our mistakes, but actually make us people who are stronger and better going forward. So that's a very powerful notion that we take with us into the Yom Kippur experience. And with that, I hope that will indeed be the case, that we should have an inspiring Yom Kippur. The theme of Tshuva Me'ava picks up even more as we get to Sukkot. Sukkot is the continuation of the Yomei HaTshuva, and where the focus is even more on the notion of Tshuva Me'ava, on an active, loving tshuva towards God through positive mitzvot that are so prominent in the Sukkot experience. So that's what we have ahead of us. We have the promise of tshuva, the notion of tshuva not only Me'ira, but tshuva Me'ava as well, that can truly uplift us and transform us in a very positive way. And our hope is that all of us should experience Yom Kippur that way, should experience Sukkot that way. We should all stay safe and healthy despite the terrible challenges that are threatening the world. And as Hashem, I look forward to seeing you after Yom Kippur. Stay in touch over the course of Yom Kippur. I look forward to seeing you afterwards. And we should all welcome the new year with the hope and the reality of better things than we've experienced this past year. But first, you should have a wonderful Shabbos. All right, Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.